Welcome, friends. Welcome back to ArtCast. I'm your host, Ron Jacobs, and I'm doing the same thing once again. Hey, but it works, okay? So here we are. The intro is not important anyway. You're here for architecture information, and that's what we're bringing you. Because once again, here on ArtCast, we're going to be talking about web services security with the gang from Patterns and Practices. So we have for you today a recording of a recent Patterns and Practices live webcast where Don, Dwayne, and Mark, once again, give me the lowdown on doing security with WYSI 3.0. This time, well, let's see. First we did the X509 certificate. Then we did the Kerberos token. Well, this time we do the tried and true, the good old username token. I think you're going to like it. So listen up. To the gang.
Ron, you now have the floor.
All right, thanks very much. And welcome, everyone, to Patterns and Practices Live. Wow, what a strange beginning we've had today. But we are pulling it together, little by little, here in Studio 2 at Microsoft Studios, where I am joined today by my guest, Dwayne Taylor, who's a project manager for RDA. Dwayne, welcome.
Thanks, Ron.
And Mark Fussell, who is a lead program manager. I guess you lead the other ones around, right? From from the Windows Communication Foundation team.
Thanks, Ron.
And Don Smith, the product manager from Patterns and Practices.
Hello, hello.
All right, so today we are going to continue in the web services security patterns thinking mode. And we've had a couple of other webcasts in the past couple of weeks. We did a first one on X509 certificates. We did one on using... what was that? Kerberos, or Kerb if you're a digerati. And now today we're going to talk about doing a username token, which sounds kind of dull, but we'll see if it gets better from there. All right, so Don, tell me about this web services security patterns.
All right, so as Ron mentioned, this is the third webcast we've done in this series that all are about the web service security guide that was that the Patterns and Practices team released in December. And With WYSI 3.0, which is what this guide has implementation patterns for, there's a number of different kinds of tokens that are available, and that's why we kind of did these webcasts around the different kinds of tokens that are available in WYSI. And Ron and I were just talking before the webcast about doing one for a security token service also, which would use tokens that were based on the SAML specification, which so I think we're going to put together a webcast about that, so keep your eyes and ears open for that one. This web service security guide targets architects and developers with pragmatic guidance on how to secure your web services. Now, that seems like, I think I've heard other people doing that before. Well, the difference between this guide and what you may and other books that are available in the market is this guide really focuses more on what your requirements are. What are the requirements of your solution so that we can make sure that you're applying the correct or the most appropriate security guidance for your solution? And that's really where this thing shines, because what I'll do right now is I'm going to flip over to a sharing slide so I can show you just a quick glimpse of the PDF document that this thing ships with. And what you'll notice about this is in the introduction, which is one of the most important parts of the guide, in all honesty, is that it has these common scenarios. There's about three different ways that you can choose or you can digest this guide. One of them is by looking at the scenarios and finding one that maps relatively closely to your solution. And you can say, oh, that one's pretty close to mine. Let me go ahead and see how they address the security issues and see if this would apply to mine. There's also a decision matrix in the appendix. And Dwayne, what was the other way that you could do this? There's decision matrices. There's a problem-solution index. That's the way you can do it. So, and those are in the appendix. What you'll notice from this, I'm going to go ahead and get started here in a minute, but real quick before I do, you can see from the part one and part two that, of course, we cover the things that you would think would be in the security. There's authentication. There's encryption. There's digital signatures. And then there's choosing the most appropriate message protection patterns and then implementing transport versus message layer. It really flows. It's designed – you could read it from start to finish, or you could just read the scenarios, find the most appropriate patterns for your solution, and then go in. But this is – these webcasts are based on this guide and the guidance in this guide. So if the webcast falls short of what you need, then this is where you're going to find the rest of your answers. So go ahead and continue with the rest of the webcast.
All right. So, you know, Don, you didn't mention – my favorite feature of the whole thing is it's free.
Okay.
Oh. So I don't have to go buy a book. I don't have to get anything else.
I was hoping if I didn't mention that, they might send me the money.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, anyway, so that's a good feature. And free guidance, how can you go wrong, right? I mean, it's wonderfully done, too. So it looks like some great work. But today, I'm just curious, what is this username token? I mean, you know, X509 sounds very cool, but username token sounds just kind of bland. What is that?
Well, the username token is the basic structure defined to interoperably pass usernames and possibly passwords back and forth in SOAP messages.
Oh, okay. So just a plain old, I got a username and maybe a password, and here's a token. Well, I guess you got to start somewhere.
Right. It may not sound that exciting, but one of the important things about this is, in terms of the architectural and the design patterns that we describe in the web server security guide, this is a representation of direct authentication. Whereas most of the things that we talked about before, like X509 and Kerberos, are forms of brokered authentication. And the big difference there is that with direct authentication, you are directly presenting a username and password to authenticate, to prove the identity of the client. Whereas with X509 and Kerberos, you've obtained some token that represents that the token issuer has vouched that you've gone through that process. So what that means is this process here is kind of the bootstrap or the key piece in order to initiate brokered authentication in most cases. For example, Kerberos, right? You log in, it's username, password. So in scenarios where you might have a security token service, a solution where it issues a token that you can use to go off and call a service or access another resource, usually this is an essential part of that, to present a username token to authenticate a user and get that token to call a service.
Okay, so you mentioned X509. So let's go back to that just real quick, because we did a whole episode on that. But what is an X509 certificate?
Well, X509 is a public key infrastructure. It talks about, basically, a lot of it is around managing certificates. The certificates are a way of being able to distribute a cryptographic key that's bound to claims about a person or an application or business, some sort of entity that can be used to with a private key pair to generate signatures so that someone can verify the identity based on the claims in the certificate that a message did in fact originate from that person. It can also, the public key that's included in the certificate can be used to encrypt messages that can only be decrypted by the intended recipient as represented in the certificate.
Okay, so X509 is cool, got a username token, pretty basic. There's one other thing we need to understand, and Mark, that's WSI3.0. What is WSI3.0?
Well, WSI3.0 is an add-on to the .NET Framework 2.0 that shipped as part of the Visual Studio 2005 timeframe in November. And it effectively allows you to provide security on top of your web services. What I mean by security is essentially the security requirements outlined on this slide, authentication to authenticate who you are in terms of the identity of the person, encryption of the data on the wire to make sure that no one other can see it, it's not free text. Signing is in order to make sure this is integrity, the fact that what I receive is what I sent. And these security requirements are effectively what WSI3.0 provides when you install it as part of your application so you can build secure web services.
Okay. All right. So now there's a lot of choices here with security and WSI. And, you know, this is the hard thing. When we get something like this, we go, well, is it Kerberos? Is it X509? What are the decision points I need to think about? So when it comes to using this username token, why would I want to do this?
Well, there's some basic decision points around it. A lot of it ties into message layer versus transport layer, which we'll address here shortly. But you know, as an interoperable password-based authentication mechanism, you know, the other thing is in the implementation that we're going to show, there's a lot of versatility in what kind of identity store that you validate those credentials against, whether it's Active Directory or a database or Atom. You know, there's a lot of we take advantage of the membership provider in ASP.NET 2.0 to kind of abstract the communication with that specific identity store to provide a common mechanism.
So it seems like a username token is almost like the lowest common denominator, right? I mean, Kerberos assumes a lot of infrastructure. X509s assumes the, you know, certificate authorities and other things. And it's like, if none of that's in place and can't make any of that work, we and can at least do username token, right?
Yeah, I think username token is, as you say, the lowest common denominator. It's the one that we all understand, we're very familiar with. We have a lot of this happening on the internet today when we go up and register on sites. And so the key part here is that username allows you to identify someone and flow that identity. And when combined with the password, allows you to authenticate who they are. And it's a very human, readable, understandable concept. Of course, part of the problem is because of that, it's very, can be insecure because, you know, your password can be the name of your dog.
Oh, yeah, yeah, exactly. Right. So now, why would I want to use X509 certificates as opposed to a username token?
Well, the X509 certificates are actually used to secure the password sent in the username token. And you can also use it to secure any other sensitive information that might be in that message. But the just to kind of build on the point that Mark had mentioned is that passwords are inherently weak from a cryptographic standpoint.
It's they're weak.
All right.
Well,
weak.
Ron did. Good job.
Well, it's a paradox because strong passwords are hard to remember,
right.
And you know are not easily remembered, and passwords that are easy to remember are not very strong.
And in fact, in WYSI 3.0, you cannot do any cryptographic algorithms with it. You can't do any encryption or signing with a username token. Well, you could do that inside WYSI 2.0. And that was mainly because actually the WS Security 1.0 spec did allow you to say, oh, you're allowed to use this token type, you know, the username password combination to encrypt messages. Of course, that's open to the so-called dictionary attacks where you steal this message and you have this big long list of passwords and you try and hack it away until eventually you find the name of the dog.
Okay. So you can't even do it with WYSI 3 because you just said that's just too weak. We're not even going to allow it.
Exactly, yes.
Oh, okay, great.
Yeah, you'd have to implement a pretty elaborate derivation scheme to derive from the password, and again, it's just generally not, you know, something you probably want to do.
Okay, so now, Mark, why would I want to use WYSI 3.0? I mean, I've got just, you know, your basic web services that comes with .NET Framework, right?
Well, one of the key decision points is around this so-called message layer as opposed to transport layer security. I mean, transport layer security is well tried and tested. We've had it around for many years. And there are many, many scenarios where you do want to do security at the transport level, i.e. SSL. But when you start talking about message security, and the way I visualize this is, you know, back in those great OO days where we brought together data and methods and we encapsulated them together, well, message level security is like bringing together your security and your data. So your message and your data is secured wherever it flows. And so as a result, when we have intermediaries, i.e. nodes that process your message on the way or just may forward your message on the way, your data is secure from beginning to end of your entire pipeline, i.e. from, you know, user to user rather than machine to machine. So that's one of the advantages of message level security. In the end, you often end up combining both transport security and message security together in different scenarios. Message level security also provides some finer grained control. You can just do encryption of parts of your message. So, for instance, say I was sending a message where I'm sending a photo to my mother, and I don't mind what the text. Anyone can read the text of my message, but I really want my photo to be secure. I can make sure that just part of my message has been secured. So, those are some of the advantages. And effectively, WYSI 3.0 provides you message level security and the ability to use these different types of tokens. Of course, we're talking about username token today to secure those messages on the wire.
You know, I remember reading some of the early specs about WS security. This was like probably 4 years ago, where one of the scenarios they talked about is a credit card purchase. And there's three parties involved. I'm the consumer, the retailer who I'm buying from, and then the bank who's issued the credit card. And the way it works today is that all parties know everything about all parts of the transaction. But it doesn't need to be that way. The retailer doesn't need to know everything about my credit card because it exposes them to, I mean, somebody could fraudulently steal the information and use it for some bad purpose. So if it were possible, the retailer could add to the message, you know, the part about the sale. My card could send some encrypted part that the retailer couldn't see, but the bank could, right? So that would be a very interesting way to think about it. Anyway, I just thought that was a fascinating scenario. So let's talk about solution, though. So in the following the patterns approach, we've talked about some of the background of the context of we're doing some web services, and we want to produce a solution here with some core objectives about using a username token. So what's our solution about here?
Well, the solution is designed to address the problem, which is, you know, how do you identify a client using a username and password securely? And the solution outlines our approach, which was authenticating it using the username token WSI 3, and also a decision point around how to secure the message with X509 certificates. The X509 certificates are used to secure more of the machine to machine from the client application to the service being called, so that any sort of sensitive information, especially the password in the username token, is protected from eavesdropping.
So if I had an application running on my laptop and I'm logging on from home, not over a VPN but just on the internet, I could use a solution like this to pass that username token. But as Mark said, I can't sign and encrypt the message with the username token, so I'm going to use the X509 certificate to do that.
Yes.
Okay, and then you also have this custom username token manager that is part of the solution?
Yeah, that's kind of more one of the real strong points of leveraging the solution is when you out of the box, WSI 3 will authenticate a username token against Windows, which is great. You're running on a Windows domain. One of the really strong extensibility points to leverage in this solution is a custom username token manager to take advantage of the ASP.NET 2.0 role and membership providers. That way, what you can do is you can create a custom username token manager that uses the API to validate the credentials and obtain roles for the user. And underneath the configuration, you can switch it to talk to Active Directory, to Atom, custom database. And it gives you a lot of flexibility in what kind of identity store you use to validate the credentials and what kind of role store you use to get the roles out for the username token.
Yeah, and that's great because that offers me lots and lots of flexibility about how I do this. So how is the process for making this work?
Well, the process is to take advantage of one of the turnkey policy assertions that's available in WSI 3.0. The turnkey assertions kind of encapsulate a set of scenarios, as Mark will probably speak to this better than I can.
Yeah. The main objective in terms of WSI 3.0 was that we went off and looked at hundreds and hundreds of customers, and we realized, there's a common theme here. And the common theme was a end-to-end messaging scenario. And so these became encapsulated in what we called our turnkey security assertions, which are done as policy files. And these common turnkey scenarios enable you to pick one of these out of the box in order to do that end-to-end scenario.
So it greatly simplifies the configuration process.
Good. Right. Time.
And what we tried to do was leverage the turnkey assertions in our solution to show, you know, so that we don't have to get into a lot of unnecessary customization of policy assertions to secure a message if we don't have to. And in this case, for the username token authentication, the turnkey assertion did a great job. There are a few options here, whether you secure it at the transport layer or at the message layer with X509, which drives the use of either username for certificate or username over transport, which we can talk about in a little bit. But the main thing is to secure the message with the sensitive information, send the credentials across, and have the service authenticate them through a username token manager.
And you say here that the client has to obtain the service's X509 certificate out of band, like, you know, you emailed it to them or something. Is that
right? In the message layer scenario, the client needs to have the service's X509 certificate installed in its certificate store.
Okay. All right. So in this is the direct authentication is one of the architecture patterns you talk about in the web services security patterns work here. So this is an example of a direct authentication pattern implemented in this case, right?
Right. It's dirt simple. It's just client initializes the request, secures the message with the credentials in it, sends it to the service. Service validates the credentials, processes the request, and returns a response.
Yeah, that looks pretty simple, I would say.
Doesn't get much simpler than that. But it's important to describe the patterns kind of in their modular pieces so that you can use them as building blocks to put together more complex solutions.
Yeah. So, for instance, a common alternative to that particular one is that your authentication store might be in the DMZ between between the internet and your intranet. And so a request will come in. You may authenticate against a particular store. Once they've authenticated there, then you send on a request internally inside your intranet. So that's like an alternative pattern where you would combine that direct authentication maybe with brokered authentication with inside your intranet.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the username over transport turnkey assertion would kind of simplify this, right? I mean, it would say, like, instead of signing with an X509 certificate and sending over HTTP, maybe I just use HTTPS to go to the service and allow the transport to protect my username token, because I can do that, right?
Yep. One of the things, the particulars, though, if you do take that approach, is that in WSI 3, the policy assertion at the message layer can't check to make sure that the transport layer is doing its job to secure the message. So it's a matter of manual configuration. You've got to make sure when you're setting it up that you've got HTTPS set up and when you use this policy.
Oh, okay, so you wouldn't want the guy who deploys it to like, oops, I left off HTTPS.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, the interesting thing about this solution is that because you're using SSL, there are some advantages to this one. Because you're using SSL, it'll negotiate the server-side certificate down to the client, so you don't necessarily have to deploy the service certificate there with it. Mm-hmm. Secondly, also that really the username is flowing the identity. So it flows the identity as part of the request, and that's where you authenticate against that, against your store. And so you're doing a combination of flowing identity with username but protecting it with transport-level security. But, of course, it's just that single point-to-point. So, again, you often combine this with you're on the internet, you're logging on with the username password, that gets protected with HTTPS to a particular box, but then you take the identity there or the username, authenticate them, and then you may impersonate that, say, with Kerberos, like we talked about last week, to call onto another service. Mm-hmm. So that's how you flow the identity down. So that's a very, very common scenario where you combine this particular turnkey security scenario with Kerberos, for example, that we talked about last week.
It is an important scenario. I hear from customers all the time. They want to do message layer security, or they want to do security with web services over the public internet, and that's a common scenario to use transport layer security over the internet, but then use a more robust security implementation inside the organization.
One of the other decision factors on those two turnkey assertions is the interoperability factor. The username for certificate security assertion uses WSecurity 1.1 extensions to sign and encrypt messages and some other things specific to how that mechanism works, that whereas username over transport does not. You can use it with WSecurity 1.0.
Okay, so if you're using some brand X server software that can't support WSE 1.1, then you're out of luck. You have to go this way.
Well, WSecurity 1.1, which is in the OASIS standardization process, is just about to be ratified. Like in the next 10 days, it'll become ratified as an approved standard. And of course, being a new standard, it'll take the next year for people to implement that particular standard. So many people are playing catch-up effectively.
Okay, but not us.
Not us.
Because we are there. All right.
Yeah. Finger on the pulse.
Okay. We're moving the frontier forward here every day. That's right.
Actually, I'm going to put Mark on the spot a little bit. Have we done workshops with other vendors around the 1.1
yes,
spec?
We've done workshops with Security 1.1 with other vendors.
Yeah, cool.
And okay. So those workshops is like when you guys go to Vegas and you, you know, you get in a room and you try to make it all work together,
yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah. We all just go, give up, and let's go.
Because what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, right? Okay.
I only brought that up because it's important for everyone to understand that even though it's true that it's going to take vendors probably over the next year to come out with, you know, RTM-type implementations,
yeah.
They have a starting point because they've already done some of the interop testing. So they have some bits.
In fact, okay. We have workshop interop workshops that happen regularly every 4 months. In fact, there's one coming up around Secure Conversation, I think about April time. So on a regular basis, we have these interop workshops. We invite a whole bunch of partners to Redmond, and we give them food and just try and bash together. They had one just this week on WS addressing, for example, up in Vancouver or in Canada somewhere anyway. And
I think it was at Whistler, wasn't it?
And there you just bash out the spec, find all the bugs, everyone goes away and fixes them, and we are achieving interoperability. So actually, it's a good point to make. Driving interoperability across different platforms is a big desire and a forcing function with a lot of these specific implementations.
Okay, all right. So if we're going to make this work, we got some details that we've got to do. And, of course, one of them is we've got to, you know, get WYSI on there, in there and enable WYSI, right?
Yep. And basically, it's just the general setup process. Once you have WYSI installed on your machine where you're developing your solution, you go in, you right-click on the project, you hit WYSI 3.0 settings, and you check that box. It's pretty straightforward. And once we get to the demo, I'll show where all that's at.
Okay.
And then you enable policy support. You select whether you want to use username over transport, username for certificate, and then you go from there.
And you have to configure the service likewise in a very similar fashion. All right, well, let's go on and just see this demonstration. You're going to show us how this works.
Yeah, this is a very basic, out-of-the-box, straightforward scenario. So.
And for our listeners, if you hit F5, you'll see a nice full-screen view.
Okay, so basically what we have is a simple client application that uses username password to authenticate. So, for example, I have a client application that calls a service that returns some information about a product. It so happens that I want to know about product foo.
My favorite product.
A lot of people do.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of people, you know, I'm going to buy stock in foo someday. I just haven't gotten around to it yet. So basically what's happening behind the covers here, if we want to take a look at the source code and the policy configuration, on the client, we've got a simple WinForm client here that when we communicate with the service, we have a web service proxy. Now, when you enable an application for WYSI support, it generates a different type of web service proxy that allows you to communicate additional information for security and for the other features that WYSI supports. And basically what we've done here is we've just provided a username token. We instantiate the username token based on the username and password that's entered into the form. And then we set our password option to send plain text. Now, one of the misconceptions here, or I should say not misconceptions, but points of confusion, is that when you specify the password option to send plain text, that doesn't necessarily mean that the password is going over the wire as plain text, because a lot of that is driven based on how you configure protection options for the message. But what it's saying is, I am sending a password. You should expect a password from me, and it's not going to be munged, you know, with a hashing algorithm or a digest or anything like that. It's going to be as the user typed it in.
Okay, yeah. So that's an important point because I mean, a lot of people might be reading this code or reviewing code, and they go, "He's sending a password, plain text. Oh my gosh!" But if the policy is right, then this will be secured.
Yes, and what we've done is we've bound the policy that we're using to communicate with the service here on the proxy, a set policy, and then we simply call the web service like we would in any other application, and then we process the results. Now, to take a quick look at the policy configuration on the client, here we have username for certificate set up, and we specify the service token. Again, this is exchanged out of band with the service and installed in the certificate store where the client application is hosted. And here we've got the store location specified, store name, store value. Here we specify which X509 certificate we want to use. Now, this is just kind of an under-the-cover look, under-the-hood look at the policy configuration. If you were to go in here and do it by hand, well, that's the hard way. There's actually a lot easier way to do it to configure policy for the client. So if you want to set up policy for the client or the service is a little bit different. We'll get into that in a second. You right-click on the project. You select WYSI Settings 3.0.
And you get an error. That's very nice.
Well, it doesn't like where my policy file is.
But, oh, okay.
But anyway, what you can do is you can go in and you can set up. Here, let me try my other client in a second. This one. Here we go. So I'll make policy foo. And what it does is it steps you through the WYSI security settings wizard. And what it'll allow you to do is configure. You select your authentication method. In this case, we would select username for username token, and we would specify that we're securing a client application. These are kind of some of the steps that we discussed a little bit earlier. So one of the things that you can do, which you probably normally would do, is since you're collecting credentials directly from a user, is to specify the username token in code that you're using to satisfy the policy. And then you configure message protection options. Here you can determine whether your protection is relying on transport, whether or not you enable your WSecurity 1.1 extensions, and conveniently, if you disable that, then you do use the username over transport.
Now, going back to that, click the back button. Go back to that previous one. If we don't choose that, then it's going to put the username password in the policy file, right?
Right. They would specify the token information in the policy file itself.
I just want to make sure everyone understood that it's either in the policy file or it's in code. If it's in the policy file, then it's effectively an XML file. And you
nice
may,
plain text.
May
yeah.
not yeah, may not want it there.
Okay.
And on your message protection options, once you configure those, you can do sign, encrypt signature, which we generally recommend because what that'll do is you sign parts of the message that are sensitive and that some may be encrypted. You want to encrypt that signature to protect it from offline attacks where an eavesdropper may potentially intercept it and try and do a cryptographic attack against it to discover the key. So we're encrypting sensitive parts of the data. We're signing first, signing the plain text, encrypting, and then we're encrypting the signature. So all of our sensitive pieces of information in the message are encrypted or protected. And then here we would specify the server certificate, like we saw in the policy settings, what the target server is, who will be validating the username token. And then you select your store location for your certificate. Select it. I don't have any in there. I'll go ahead and pull one from current user. And I'll pick a certificate to fill it in here, and your policy would appear there in your list of policies. So once you've configured your setup, it should look something like this. Once you open up the config file.
Well, that's really convenient because I hate having to learn all the gory details of XML config files and trying to get those right. I mean, that is a pain in the neck.
Yeah, it's actually gotten a lot simpler with WSI 3. And just in contrast on the server, the config file. We'll look at the policy file on the server. One of the main differences between the client and the service policy is that, well, first of all, the service doesn't need a service X509 token. It knows who it is. But it has authorization assertions. So if you want to control which users, based on the identity, the credentials presented in the username token, have access to that service, you can specify it through an authorization policy. You can do it by allow model, deny model. You can use roles, or you can use individual identities.
Okay. And that's so when this message is received, some token manager is going to look at it, authenticate it, populate the roles, and then check this, right?
That's exactly right, yes.
Yep.
The default username token manager that we supply as part of WSI 3.0 effectively does a Windows logon,
mm-hmm.
Gets back, authenticates that against Windows logon, gets back the roles for that user, populates an iPrinciple for that particular logged on user, and then from the iPrinciple you can get the roles for the user and authenticate it against these.
Yeah, but as you were saying earlier, Duane, you could use the membership and personalization features to kind of create your own custom one if you had like a custom database and you can grab roles out of whatever you want, right?
Right. You might, in some situations, your username token manager may have to make more intelligent decisions as to where credentials need to be validated at sometimes based on whether it's an internal customer or an internal user or an external customer, for example.
Mm-hmm. Very cool.
Okay.
Is that it?
Yep.
Excellent. Oh, I'm so sorry. Out of time for this edition of ArtCast. We shall be back on the very next episode with the remainder of this Patterns and Practices live webcast. And, you know, I expect that I'm going to be doing some more of these. In fact, I have a meeting later today where we're going to talk about doing some more Patterns and Practices stuff on ArtCast, which I think is very cool because I used to be on Patterns and Practices team, and I really believe in the work they do. And every time we put Patterns and Practices on ArtCast, you guys just love it. You eat it up. You're like, give me more Patterns and Practices. So there'll be more. Okay, count on it. There'll be more because I'm going to deliver what you're asking for. So what would you like to hear about on ArtCast? Send me a note to ron.jacobs@microsoft.com and let me know. And who knows, maybe we'll get it on the air for you. We'll see you next time.
on ArtCast.
Next time on ArtCast, Ron Jacobs.
Someone might go, well, I'm just going to grant network service the rights to read that key. Bad idea.
Mark Bissell.
Yeah, a lot of people think that because they've hashed a password, it's made them more secure. Well, yes, a tiny bit.
Dwayne Taylor.
Or something strange, yeah.
Don Smith.
If you weren't happy with that answer, totally check out the guide. Even if you were happy with it, check out the guide anyway.
Jacobs.
It's audio only because we're far too ugly to put on camera.